and welcome to episode 15 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include local judge, tournament organiser, and contributor to the Australian Tabletop Gaming Network, Thomas Daniel.
Hey, guys.
Runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Two-time store champion and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
How's everyone doing today?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Hope you're all having a lovely day.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian National's Top 8 competitor. So our episode this week is a little different than usual. We're actually going to cover a few subjects, all for the benefit of new players. So maybe you've just bought the core set, or you've played a few games online, or seen your friends play. You've heard the rules and now you'd really like to know where to go from there. So we're going to start with a bit of Netrunner 101. These aren't just the basics, but also a few fundamentals that aren't immediately obvious when you've been playing with the core game. So, Jesse, what are a couple of things that you think each player needs to understand about the game?
I think it's very important to understand, we've spoken about this a bit before, what your deck is trying to do, and we're going to get into that a little bit later on. If you break down knowing what your game plan is to the smallest unit, and that is a click, then with each click, you want to be doing the most efficient thing you can to advance your game plan. And the best way to think about this is usually turn by turn. As a turn-based game, Netrunner lends itself to thinking about things by turns. At the start of your turn, you have quite a bit of information on which you can estimate what you're going to be able to achieve by the end of that turn. You know what your cards are in hand, you know how many credits you have, you know how many credits your opponent has, and if you're the corp, you obviously have more information like what the cards are face down in play. And from there, you can plan out a turn. If you don't plan your turn, if you sort of take actions at random, just going by feel of what you think might be the resources that you'll need, you might find yourself in a situation where you've, for instance, gained credits or installed cards before drawing, when in fact you knew all along that you were going to have to draw a card this turn. And the card that you drew is one that you would have rather install, or you know that you draw a card and that card will allow you to gain credits more efficiently than just clicking for a credit. So planning out your turn and thinking about what you're going to have to do this turn, and then what you want to do this turn, and trying to order those things in your head, and then also thinking about whether there are any actions you can take early in your turn that will allow you to potentially gain more information or gain more out of the other things that you want to do in your turn. So that could mean that generally you want to draw before your other actions, because drawing is going to give you information early in your turn that you can use to influence the things you are going to do anyway later. Runs can also give you information, but there is also danger in a run if there's ice, or if there could potentially be cards in the zone that you're in, the server that you're running into, that can hurt you or impact on your resources. So you need to manage that risk as well.
Liam, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, definitely. Like balancing the risk of a run with the intent to gain the information as the runner, which is essentially what your motivation is as the runner. You want to hack into their servers and find out what's going on. So if you make a run on R&D, for example, and you see a piece of ice that trashes one of your programs, until you can break that ice, you're in a very safe place if you just don't run any new ice after the corp draws that card. So that's a good way to think about how you can gain information to then plan out the rest of your game or the rest of your turns. Another good example is, say, if your opponent has lots of Byroid ice. Byroids all give you the ability to click through them. So if you run early in your turn when you expect them to have Byroid ice, you'll get to spend clicks necessarily rather than require breakers and be punished for not having breakers. So that's another way that you can plan out your turns so as to essentially lower the risk of being damaged back by the corp. And I think in general, it's better to run earlier in the turn.
Thomas, do you think there's anything that you wish somebody had told you when you started playing?
I guess when I started playing was back when it was just core set, so we were kind of all figuring it out at the same time. But if I were to go back to myself then, I would just say to try and remember every card that you access. And particularly, you know, think to yourself, if you were to see these cards that your opponent is playing, regardless of what they are, try and build that deck in your head, you know? If he's playing card X, Y, and Z, well, what deck would I play card X, Y, and Z in? And that way you can kind of get a better picture of maybe what to expect from your opponent.
Yeah, your opponent certainly isn't doing things at random. Like, they're reasonable people as well. And another way you can do that is by remembering to count influence. Remembering to count your opponent's influence is a good way to go about that as well.
So whether you're the corp or the runner, using whatever information is presented to you, I guess, is what we're saying is the core of that. So whenever your opponent plays a card, think about what strategy that fits into. Think about if it's from out of faction, what's the influence cost? How many influence does their ID allow them beyond that? And what other cards could they potentially be playing there? Something that's probably the steepest learning curve in Netrunner is knowing what ice you could run into as the runner. Learning as much about the commonly played ice as possible is probably an excellent way to start to overcome what is the hardest thing about beginning playing the game. Because if you're running blind and you don't know what the corp could have for each amount of credits they have in their credit pool, then that impacts on your ability to effectively plan your turn. Whereas if you know that if they have 4 credits, you know every single piece of ice they could possibly res, that's extremely beneficial to you and your ability to plan out what you're going to do. There are ways that you can gain information within the game by running and seeing cards or by just keeping track of the cards they play, but there's also ways you can gain information from just simply knowing the card pool and what they could possibly have and what they could possibly do with the resources currently available to them.
And just a little further on from that, Jesse, the information you have in terms of the amount of credits your opponent has in their credit pool, and knowing just not just ice, but other cards that they could play and how many credits they maybe have to save on their turn, so which might tell you that they're maybe not going to res ice because they want to play maybe an operation during their turn which costs X credits. If you see the runner discard an icebreaker at the end of their turn, that can say to you that they've already drawn or have the other icebreakers they need in their hand or in play.
So part of what knowing the card pool is not just knowing ice, but also knowing the strategies that your opponent could be playing. So if you take a look through a tournament winning decklist page, say the tournament mill winning decklist page on StimHack, and try and understand what those decks are trying to do, or if you just go down to a local game night and watch some of the other players playing out their decks, you'll gain an understanding of the variety of different strategies that people are employing in the game. And once you know that, you can identify key cards such as Scorched Earth, which is part of the Tag and Bag strategy, or Biotic Labor and Sand City Grid, which are part of the Fast Advance strategy. And you can see that if your opponent is discarding their Scorched Earths, for instance, then you can ignore that Scorched Earth threat, which is a really valuable piece of information. Or if your opponent is playing a Haas Bioroid deck and they're splashing Sand City Grid and you see one off the top of R&D, then you can very quickly know that they're spending 3 of their precious influence on that card, which means they're probably playing a Fast Advance strategy. So you can start to craft information about what strategies your opponents are playing by knowing the card pool and knowing what strategies cards lend themselves to.
Just throwing back a little bit there to understanding more about ice in general, you don't need to necessarily remember how every single piece of ice in the game reads from top to bottom. I think what's important is to recognize what ice you personally with your deck can't necessarily deal with. That's always a limiting factor in how you build your deck. There are always going to be things that you as a runner can't deal with, and so it's incredibly important to recognize where those limitations are and look out for them in game. You know, whether it's one piece of ice, or maybe it's large barriers, or maybe it's sentries with 4 or more strength that you won't be able to deal with, you need to recognize when you don't have the capacity in your deck, and either make allowances, change your deck in that regard, or then be able to look around the board, make sure that you access R&D a little bit, see if they have that ice coming up, because you don't want to run headlong into it most of the time.
There's no article you can read or podcast you can listen to that's going to give you this information completely and you're going to retain it all. The only thing you can do as a Netrunner player is to play more games and, in my opinion, play tournaments. And now that can be a pretty daunting aspect to some players, especially if you're new. I know the first time you play a tournament in a new game, you can be a bit nervous and whatever, but you will learn more from going to a tournament and losing 4 rounds than you will from just sitting with your couple of friends who also have the core set and beating them all the time, or just jamming the games with them. You'll learn a lot more from losing those tournament games, and that's fantastic because that's the only way you learn. It's the only way you're really going to get better and learn that card pool and learn the different strategies and the different way that different people play different decks.
That's certainly not to say as a new player that everyone in the tournament is going to be better than you. Tournaments are accessible to everyone, be them good, bad, new, seasoned, hot, spicy, whatever. Like, everyone goes to tournaments, and they are, in my view, they really are where the community, the Netrunner community, comes together. weekly tournaments at your local game store are absolutely sweet. If you do really enjoy the game and you want to play more and more, looking ahead for the next 6 months, looking at some store championship tournaments feeding into regional championship tournaments, feeding into nationals, maybe even feeding into worlds. It's a really sweet community to get involved in if you're prepared to take that first step into tournament structure, into organized play. Tournament's almost too strong a word because they're not really competitive settings a lot of the time, not until you get to the higher tables. And then even then, Jesse, when he was at Worlds, said to me he didn't find it all too cutthroat. It wasn't even that competitive. They were just nice people. Structured play is how you're going to get more enjoyment out of the game, to maximize the variability in what you're playing against, maximize your opportunities to play different offbeat decks or decks of your own design and see how they work in the metagame, see how other people react to them. Structured play is the only way to do that.
And the other great side of it is that you do get to make friends. I mean, you meet lots of interesting people, you'll learn a lot more about Netrunner, and you'll hopefully make some friends along the way, which is pretty awesome.
Well, I can say that everybody in this podcast wouldn't have come together had we not all at some point decided to go and play a Netrunner tournament.
Isn't that a beautiful story?
Yeah, it's so great. Nice.
Your heart just flutters.
For a lot of players who have been playing for quite a while, when it comes to these store championships and regional seasons, one of the things they get most out of it is the ability, or the opportunity rather, to go to a different place, be it an hour outside of where they usually play, or be it 10 hours, and they get to go there and experience other players and different metas. If you don't know what a meta means, I guess it means a different play group, you know, that use different cards, that have developed differently. And I think for a lot of newer players, you'll get that same kind of benefit, and even more so if you step outside of the kitchen table and just go to a game night and play four rounds against four completely different dudes.
Yeah, I guess what we're trying to emphasize is that the difference between playing with your friends in your living room and playing with the Netrunner community at large at the local game store is actually just the amount of people that play. It's still going to be a friendly setting. It's still going to be exactly the same game. It's still Netrunner. It's not different.
Moving on, we're just going to spend a few minutes talking about the fundamentals for each side of the game, so being Runner and Corporation. So we're going to start off with Runner. I thought Shieldsy might be able to kick us off there, as he's taught me over the years, you know, quite a few strong Runner fundamentals. So, Liam, what's your opinion there?
Know your rig. This is a big thing for me. Know your rig, know what it needs to do, know why you're playing the cards you're playing, and know all the little finicky numbers that seem kind of relevant, but then seem to become relevant more and more often. So know how many link you have when your rig is complete. Know how many memory it takes to host all the programs you want. Know how many cards you actually need to install before you get to the position in the game where you feel like you can win. And know all those little... This comes back to knowing ice. Know how much it costs to go through the ice you expect to see with your breakers. Reduce ice to a number, not to a series of subroutines and to a card type and to blah-de-blahs, all this different knowledge. Don't worry about any of that. That's too much to remember. Look at it as a number and tie that number to the breakers you want to use. It'll speed up your play. It'll make you have to remember less. You'll get to be more flexible in the way you play. You'll get to just enjoy more of the game and have to go into the think tank a lot less.
Wilfie, do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Little things like that are really important, and you'll come to understand them as you, especially playing more tournaments, because they not only expose you to new situations, but expose you to common situations over and over again. So, for example, a common thing I see people do is not leave enough credits in their credit pool to score NAPD contract, which is a neutral agenda. It's a very commonly played, and when you access it as the runner, you have to pay 4 to steal it. So 4 is kind of the essential point for if you want to get into a server. As a runner, you're going to have to consider that your opponent could have an NAPD, and if you don't have the 4 to steal it, then you'll just have wasted your access when it could have been very good, turning it into very bad. So the specific numbers that are important will become more obvious to you as you play more games. You don't necessarily have to think about them very deeply, but rather having them implanted into your memory, so you don't really have to constantly think about them as you go along the game, rather just intuitively knowing how breakers and ice interact, especially commonly played ones.
One of the things that I think's really important as the runner is to know how you're going to win the game and what is going to give you the best chance to do that. So if you have a deck that is geared towards pressuring one particular central server, then you want to be getting into that central server as often as possible and using the cards that will maximize your return on doing so. So, for example, criminals will often get additional benefits from accessing HQ, whether they are playing Gabriel Santiago as their identity, who gets 2 credits the first time he makes a successful run on HQ each turn, or whether they're playing Emergency Shutdown, which, if you've made a successful run on HQ this turn, you can de-res a piece of ice that the corp has already paid to res, which can be a significant economic boost and a blow to the corporation. If you're playing a criminal deck that is playing these cards that will give you benefits if you can make it into HQ, and you spend most of the game running on R&D, then you're probably not giving yourself the maximum chance to win the game. Similarly, if you're playing Shaper, and you've got lots of cards that allow you to access multiple cards from R&D, and you spend the game just running on remotes and running on HQ, and not using these multi-access R&D cards, then you're not giving yourself the best chance to win. The other thing to remember is putting yourself in the corp's shoes and thinking about how they are trying to win, knowing that if they're not playing a fast advanced strategy, they're going to have to create a remote server and try and score their agendas out of it. If you can maintain a lot of credits, develop your board consistently so that you've got icebreakers in play and can get through each of the basic types, that is Sentry, Codegate, and Barrier, the 3 main types of ice, then you know that the agendas are either going to be building up in the corporation's hand, HQ rather, or that they're going to be still in R&D, or that the corp has discarded some of them into archives. And as the game goes on, one of the skills of a good runner is to judge, based on what the corp is doing, where those agendas are accumulating, and then making timely runs on those servers to try and steal the agendas and give yourself the maximum chance of finding them.
Another good reason you want to start thinking in the corp's shoes is that they will also try and catch you out as the runner. They'll try and trash your programs or trash your hardwares or deal you meat damage and flatline you. So putting yourself in their shoes lets you think about exactly how they're going to try and bait you or pressure you into making these runs into bad situations. So for example, if they play a remote in the early game, place a card behind it that you suspect might be an agenda, and then you run there, and the ice they have ends the run, trashes a program that you have installed, or just trashes a piece of hardware, and then the card you access is irrelevant, then they got you quite well. They gained a massive advantage just by laying out some bait. Recognizing the capacity as the corp is intrinsic to becoming a good runner and to feeling like you know what's going on, because the corp and the runner always constantly interact, and you can become a better corp player by playing the runner more, and you can become a better runner player by playing the corp more.
And part of that comes back to knowing the card pool. I think one of the hardest things as you learn a little bit more about the game and start to understand the basics of what each faction is trying to do to you, for instance, that Jinteki might be trying to lay out traps as bait or deal you net damage and flatline you. Once you understand that, you might become quite hesitant to run Jinteki servers. In transitioning from being at that level to being at the next level, what you should try to do is understand exactly what the traps are that the Jinteki player could have, and know that if they, for instance, don't have 4 credits, then they can't activate a snare. So if your opponent who's playing Jinteki goes down to 3 credits, you know that you can run R&D without having to worry about snare. So understanding what traps are available to the corporation and what resources they need available to them to make those traps work is also very important.
Moving into the corporation side, Wilfie, could you take us through some of what you believe are to be the corporation fundamentals?
Yeah, so the most important thing to know as the corp is that the runner is going to have to react to what you do. And the most fundamental interaction in this way is through remote servers. So, of course, we all know that as the corporation, you place ice on your central servers to protect them from being accessed easily by the runner. But the real core of the corp's decision-making is in remote servers, because that's where the corp advances their game plan of scoring agendas and all the other things that they want to do. For example, if you have an agenda in hand and you're trying to look at whether it's safe to score it. Understanding this idea is the concept of a scoring window, which you might have heard of before. A scoring window is where, as the corp, you're able to advance your game plan by scoring agendas. Not necessarily that the runner can't get into your server if they want, but that it's going to be difficult for them to get into your server, and so they're going to have to make a choice. And you can, for example, once the runner knows that you have a scoring window, you can exploit this knowledge by putting something in your server that isn't an agenda. And that's where, not necessarily a trap, but even just non-advanceable or advanceable asset can be used in this way as a bluff. And this forms the core of Netrunner interaction. Once the corp and the runner both know that the corp is going to try and advance their agendas in situations where it's safe to do so, then we have this interplay. And it's very important for both the corp and the runner to understand this interplay, because if the corp doesn't know when it's safe to score their agendas, then they'll just end up floundering in their hand, in their archives, and they'll never get a chance to actually progress their game plan and win, which is extremely important.
Yeah, certainly. Putting cards through your remote servers is the way you will ask the runner to spend resources to see this information. If you don't have very taxing ice on HQ or on R&D, the runner will be able to see a lot of your cards just by running those central servers. But when you start putting cards into the remote, they need to check them again, because they don't necessarily know whether the card you've placed is an agenda or just an asset or even just an upgrade. So if your remote server costs a little bit to go through, you gain an advantage by sending the runner through there more often. And in general, the more you can send the runner through taxing servers, where maybe you have two or three pieces of ice that do cost a significant amount to go through, you want to make those servers where the runner is expecting to go more often. So in general, I think the runner wants to be in a position where they can access from R&D once or once every one turn or once every two turns. That's how they present an element of inevitability. By simply accessing cards off R&D, eventually they will end the game. So R&D is certainly a server where you want to put slightly larger ice, or even two pieces of slightly larger ice, or if the game goes longer, more ice. In general, sending the runner through remotes and R&D, or through just taxing servers in general, is better for you because it gains more advantage from the ice that you already had to install, pay for, and draw.
If, as the corporation, you think that you want to be protecting the cards that you don't know about, which is the cards in R&D, and you want to have a safe place to place, a safe server in which to place your agendas in play, so you want to have R&D protected and you want to have a remote protected. So that brings us to HQ, and HQ is really quite a difficult one as the corporation to know how much to defend, and to know how much information to give away, because HQ is a zone that the corporation has all the information about and the runner has no information about. So as the corporation, if you're icing up HQ, are you giving away information to the runner that you have agendas or cards you want to protect in there? Perhaps. But there are some really crucial cards in the game, which some of which we've discussed earlier, that make protecting HQ in the early game very, very important. Account Siphon from the core set is one of these crucial cards, because if you don't protect HQ and you try to protect your R&D and a remote server early in the game, the runner can threaten to steal your credits, not only take them off you, but give themselves a massive credit boost. And this can potentially leave you with not enough credits to res those ice that you've placed on your remote and your R&D, which then gives the runner free access to those servers if they run. So protecting HQ against Account Siphon is very, very important. The other cards that you need to be worried about in terms of attacking HQ are the Identity, Gabriel Santiago, and also generally you want to be protecting your HQ, because when you do draw agendas, after you've been protecting your R&D and the runner hasn't been able to get in and hasn't been able to steal them before you draw them, when eventually you do draw them, you may get into a situation where you can't safely place them into the remote server in that same turn, and you may have to leave them in HQ for a couple of turns before you place them in the remote server. So it's important to be able to at least place some tax on the runner if they want to come in and check HQ to try and find those agendas.
One of the other big things to keep in mind is if you're trying to build towards something, maybe you're trying to res some kind of enormous ice or, you know, play a sequence of operations, you can take it steady, so you can actually slowly build towards there. You don't always have to rush. However, recognizing the times where you can rush and you can try and get there quickly and maybe pull a fast one is one of the key kind of learns that you'll pick up as you play more and more games of Netrunner.
Just coming back into that, the idea of how fast you deploy your ice, how fast you deploy your operations, I think it is a common mistake to think that maybe you can draw more cards to find more operations to gain credits, or that you can draw more cards to find more ice and install at that ice. But at the same time, you don't always have the capacity to actually afford to res all that ice. Ice is in general quite expensive, and as you play more and more of it, the cost becomes higher with it. As you install ice further out in servers, the install cost comes with that piece of ice. So remembering that when you install and res ice, it is quite expensive. A lot of the time, if you overextend and play out more ice than you can afford to res, the runner will be able to poke and prod around and force you to res ice, maybe in some places that aren't fundamental to your game plan, or maybe res some ices that they won't want to go through more than two or three times over the course of the game, which is very different from ice on R&D, which they might want to go through 10 times in the game, or ice on your remote, where you can dictate when the runner actually needs to go through there and find your windows. So knowing where they were, controlling your money and controlling the development of your board position is fundamental to how the co-op operates.
And I guess that comes back to also what you want from your ice. I think it's really important that people know that having end the run subroutines on your ice is extraordinarily important. If you're not ending runs, if you're just relying on ice that have other funky abilities, then you're not going to be keeping them out and you're not going to be stopping them from scoring agendas. So ending the run and trashing programs are the two most important things for your ice to do. So if you're thinking about which ice to include in your deck, I definitely highly recommend those two subroutines.
Yeah, and although we've talked a lot here about ending the run and protecting your agendas from the runner accessing them, in my experience, the best way to actually protect your agendas from being stolen is not to ice them, but to score them. If you can score your agendas, the runner will never be able to access them again. So bear that in mind and recognize that scoring the agenda out of hand with a card like Biotic Labor or like Sand Sands City Grid that Jesse talked about earlier that lets you fast advance agendas, or scoring out of your emote when there is a window to do it, means that you don't have to spend time holding agendas in hand, ready to get stolen by the runner, meaning that you have to ice up HQ more. You don't have to protect the rest of your agendas from accessing by icing up R&D, because they can then steal those agendas from your hand. The more you can score through, just by being aggressive with your agendas and recognizing when those windows appear, the less capacity the runner has to steal them. In every sense, attempting to win the game by scoring agendas is better for you, because it means that the runner has less chance of winning their way and you have more chance of winning just by getting to 7 points.
Excellent. That concludes our episode on Netrunner 101 for the beginner players. If you'd like to check out some other episodes which have some good information for newer players, you can check out our segment on Mulligans in episode 6. There's a segment on identifying the aggressor called Who's the Beatdown in episode 11. There's also a deck building primer for runners in episode 6 and a corp deck building primer in episode 4. And once you get into that stage where you're wanting to play some tournaments and perhaps some higher level tournaments, they've also got Wilfie's playtesting primer in episode 3. Until then, we are back every single Monday. You can send us an email if you want to get in contact with us at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter @winningagenda, or you can check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. We also want to give a quick shout out to everybody on the Netrunner Geeks group on Facebook for voting us the number 4 most listened to Netrunner podcast. That's certainly something we'll be framing and hanging above our mantelpiece. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I've already added it to my CV, actually. I'm pretty pumped. So yeah, thanks to all these people who voted, and yeah, we never miss an opportunity to talk about our achievements, that's for sure.
Yeah. Liam and Wilfie, you guys are getting bro tats, aren't you?
Yeah, shout out. Them.
Oh, you got them already? Oh.
Yeah, we got them in Adelaide a few years ago.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, road trips are fundamentals of the game.
No, I meant
he meant you're getting a new one that says Top 4 Netrunner Games Podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I had no idea what was going on. I thought we were just spamming.
No.
Anyway, we'll be back next Monday, guys, and we look forward to hearing from you. So see you until then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you, guys.
See ya.
See ya.